Hey out there, everybody, welcome to Caffeination 112, the News Horde Edition. We have a huge, absolutely massive ton of news for you today. Hopefully you'll enjoy all of it. We'd just like to welcome back everybody who's listened to this show before. Hi, thanks you. Thank you. You are the reason that we keep this insane pace up. I've heard tell that some people aren't necessarily caught up to all the newest and greatest episodes, so we're trying to make them a little bit shorter so that people can enjoy them as they are wont to do. And we'd just like to say hi and thank you to everybody out there who's given us a shot for the first time. This is the Caffeination Podcast. If you're listening to it on the stream over the Tech Podcast Network, then you can find it at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. We're a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So, all right, everybody out there, hope everybody's doing pretty good. It's been a great week so far. All the students are out of college, so I've had a relatively relaxing week, albeit a little bit paint fume filled. I had my office painted on Monday and Tuesday and worked in it in the same days while the guy was there. Guy was great. Everything was, he was very respectful of all the technology laying around, and I love when people are that way, especially when they're working in a high traffic area. If they're that much more respectful of the stuff that's going on around them, it makes it easier to work with them. I helped him out, he helped me out, it was a great thing. Now the office is slightly blue. Alright, it's a lot better than the soda-stained walls and nastiness that was there before. So, alright. Like I said, we have a whole bunch of interesting information to get through today here on the Caffeination. We do not have the Tech Talk this week. I've actually couldn't figure out what I wanted to talk about until far too late in the game. Hadn't done really any research on it. Not that I do usually do a whole lot. Just want to be able to give you somewhat of an intelligent discussion on something as opposed to just saying, yeah, this is how it goes. So next week we are going to have the Media Center Edition where we talk about sharing media in between different things in your house and a whole bunch of other stuff. We're going to hopefully rock that out for you and get everything in all set up. If there's stuff that you're familiar with in the Media Center world, be it a home server or something like that, free software or anything like that, please feel free to send us a line at caffeination@gmail.com and we'll include it in the show and give you credit where credit is due. All right. Well, first up, we have our we have our dose of PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network. This is a band called Good Riddance and their song's Darkest Days. A little bit of a punk flavor to it, but without the annoying screechy vocals. I'm not a real big fan of the punk genre. I'm much more a fan of the pop punk genre. So, like, Rancid, not so much. Good Charlotte, a little bit more so, that kind of thing. I like it when somebody can actually sing as opposed to just screaming. Same thing, I'm a fan of heavy metal, but not death metal. So that's pretty much where I live, musically speaking. So we have a rather good song today. It has a great beat, great musicality to it, so hopefully you'll enjoy it. So here from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com, we have a band called Good Riddance and their song Darkest Days. So here it is. Let me know what you think.
Power I could be. Declared a private war on the
Again, that was the band Good Riddance and their song Darkest Days from the PodSafe Music Network. Hope you like that. Like I said, had a great musicality to it, had a good beat. Everything was functioning correctly, musically speaking. So hopefully you enjoyed that. We're trying to mix it up a little bit here. We had a little bit of bluegrass, bluesy country music a couple times ago. We've been playing with the rock, so we'll just see what we can hit. We'll see if I can find some rap on the PodSafe Music Network that actually doesn't have a lot of expletives in it. This one had one, but you can't hear it because it's excised. So, all right. First up, before we get all into the tech tidbits, we'd just like to tell you a little bit about our sponsor. This podcast is sponsored by the good folks over at GoToMeeting. These days, whether you're in a business or you simply want to share something with all your family and your friends, email and voicemail just don't cut it anymore. That's why you should give GoToMeeting a shot. It's an online meeting solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business associates, your family, and your friends. GoToMeeting makes it easy to provide training and share information with everybody. All you need to do is have your PC, an internet connection, and a phone. You can invite people to meet you online, your attendees see your computer screen on their monitors, and best of all, you can meet as long as you want, as often as you need, for one flat rate. But don't take my word for it, give it a shot yourself. Try it free over at GoToMeeting.com for 45 days, no credit cards required. Just head on over to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and type in the promo code PODCAST, that's PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, the Try It Free button, and the promo code PODCAST. Try GoToMeeting free today. Like we said before, and we'll say it again, we'd like to thank GoToMeeting for sponsoring this show. Helps us pay the bills over here. Now, first up, we have a little bit of general cruft to get out of the way. It's general just junk that's laying around. We've been aware that there's been some strange outages over at the Caffeination podcast. Strange times when you try and go to our server, but you can't get there. So we'd kindly request that you email us the approximate time that happened. We're trying to build a case against our... I don't know what else to say. We're trying to build a case against our service provider, trying to make them aware of the issues that were on our server, hopefully get a little bit of compensation when it comes back to renew or move to a different server if that strikes us. Because they've been good to us for... I don't know. I've been with this company, iPowerWeb, for well on 4 years now, and that's a long time in a technology-related sector to have a relationship with a company. Now, this is the first year that I've actually started using the servers a lot more than I had been. There was just home pages and stuff up there before, and I've had issues periodically. Like, for instance, for the month of February, I'm missing half of my stats. Talked about that before, and so we're trying to get a little something out of them. All right, and then that pretty much covers the next thing, the server business and our hosting woes. So if anybody out there has any recommendations for good hosting providers that provide you access to the raw logs, the raw stats, as it were, please shoot an email over to caffeination.com. We're considering GoToMeeting, but they're not GoToMeeting. That's the sponsor. We're considering GoDaddy. We'll let you know how that works out. They're relatively inexpensive compared to some of the other places I've seen, for the style and size of a server we would need. So, again, just wanted to get that on out of the way. Right now into the tech tidbit section, it's broken up into two general categories here, geeky news and high-tech hijinks. I even wrote the word, and I can't even say it. All right, they're generally the same thing, but the high-tech hijinks are a little bit more involved. The geeky news are just going to run right on through. All right, let's see. First up, we have there was an auction for the cloak worn by Sir Alec Guinness. Yes, the man who played Obi-Wan Kenobi in the original Star Wars trilogy, 4, 5, and 6 of 1 through 6. It was sold on an auction. Now, apparently there's this huge... story that goes around behind the cloak. It disappeared for years on end. It was actually used for the filming of The Mummy. I can't remember where a cloak was used other than maybe the protectors of the city, maybe. I don't know. I have to go watch The Mummy again, see if I can spot the cloak. But it just seems strange that a cloak with that much kind of history behind it would be a reused movie prop. Well, apparently somebody found it 2 years ago and it has been a part of an exhibition over in London. All about film memorabilia. Well, they're starting to auction off. They auctioned it off for £54,000. That equates to roughly $103,000. That's awesome. It broke all the previous records for the helmet worn by Terry Jones and Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Sean Connery's dinner jacket from Thunderball, just a whole bunch of other stuff. It just beat him out, blew him out of the water. So it's kind of crazy. Thought I'd inform you all, now you know, kind of thing. The next thing we have here is Behold the Awesome Power of the Mind. Now, I don't know if anybody out there actually knows anyone who is autistic, but it's a problem with communication. It's not that the person is unintelligent by any stretch of the imagination. It's the fact that they're basically trapped inside their own head. They can't communicate what they're feeling or what they're thinking. They lack the normal social niceties that help them interact with other people. But these people are usually, well, not necessarily usually, but are quite often gifted in other manners. There's a story over at the Sci-Fi Tech blog at sci-fi.com about a man, Stephen Wiltshire, from the United Kingdom. Basically, this guy is known as the human camera. When he was 5 years old, he spoke his first words. So that kind of gives you the scope of his problem, let's just say. And then when he was around 11 years old, he asked for a pen and paper, and he had just taken a helicopter ride over London. He was able to, from memory, draw the city plan, draw all the buildings, had all the proper number of windows and everything. I mean, it apparently it was amazing. Well, the guys from over at, let's just see. I think this just might be the people from the Sci-Fi blog, but there's a video over there you absolutely have to see. It's unbelievable. What they did is they took this gentleman on a 45-minute helicopter ride over Rome. Now, if you've ever seen Rome from the sky or if you've ever been there, you know it is a hugely complex and elaborate city. It's the Eternal City for a reason. You know, there's just things everywhere. There's history everywhere. So it's also very detailed. So this isn't like he's flying over, you know, a little hick town and got the number of windows right on somebody's house. No, they gave him a 45-minute helicopter ride and a 5-foot panorama of paper, 5.5 feet long. Then they had him start to draw to see what he could come up with. He came up with almost an exact copy over 3 days of everything he saw. And the only thing that at the end, he was upset that he didn't have time to be more detailed. He did not look at a picture of the city after he had flown over. The only thing he had to go on was that 45-minute experience. You really owe it to yourself to head on over to the Sci-Fi blog and check this out. You can follow the link over at caffeination.com. You need to see the video. It is unbelievable. From this one helicopter ride, he got the right number of columns at the Colosseum. It's so exact is the Colosseum that they could do a fade in the movie from the real life picture of the Colosseum to his drawing, and it is exact. They probably had to mess with it to scale, you know, zooming in and coming out, but it's unbelievable. They started, doubting him and said, "Well, okay, well, picture of St. Peter and Paul, that's pretty dominant on the landscape." Then they went back and did another helicopter ride just to check it out and check their own footage, and from that vantage point, it was that dominant. They started measuring the different hills and say, "Oh, well, you have all the hills the same size. I mean, this is Rome. There's one huge hill, and there's, you know," they started talking all about the different heights and everything and what you should be able to see and what you shouldn't be able to see. Apparently, from his vantage point, the scope of the hills, they looked almost identical. So you really have to see this. This is unbelievable. And I hope it brings a little bit of notice to the disease and to the unbelievable power of the human mind that's locked behind some people. I mean, we marvel at things like digital cameras. We marvel at things like my Palm Pilot, for instance, my little pocket PC that can remember meetings. This gentleman can remember the entire city layout of Rome. And I can't remember when I have a meeting next. So that's just put you in a little bit of perspective, you know. But I just thought it was unbelievable. Definitely wanted to show you out there. Next up we have What Would Wiki Do? If you've ever been curious about what about the main pages on Wikipedia, who visited what and how often, you can head on over to a link you have here from 03-2007. So basically for the month of March. Oh, I'm sorry, this is only for 6 days in March. This is a top 100 stories. The first page has been the main page. You know, obviously has somewhere around 4% of the total views. Then they go down and they have, of course, the prerequisite number of porn listings. They have Naruto, which is some kind of anime, which I'm not actually familiar with. And then I'm pretty sure that this one is actually because of This reference is because of a movie that's coming out. The Battle of Thermopylae is the story that the 300 is based on, the movie coming out soon. So I'm pretty sure that's why that's ranked number 5. So you should really just go over there and check it out. It's unbelievable the amount of different things that you can see on this thing. There's iPods number 81, China's 97. These are just people looking for different things. New York City is 37. Adolf Hitler was, oh man, just lost it, 31. So Adolf Hitler has more searches than New York City, but less than a Anna Nicole Smith listing in the Lost TV series. The highest TV series is Heroes, one I had always kind of meant to get into but never really did. All right, moving right along, just definitely you need to go over there and check it out. From over at Gizmodo, they have an application, a gadget, if you will, that is going to eradicate one of the harshest problems in our society today. People are starving over in other countries. People are, you know, we are involved in a war over in other countries. But you know, what does somebody go out and invent? They invent the shower bow. Yes, this ends the dreaded shower curtain effect once and for all, as reads the headline. It's actually a large, basically lever with a weight up at the top so that when you clip it on, it bows the shower curtain out, apparently giving you 25% more room inside the shower so that when you have the hot water on, the shower curtain doesn't billow in and touch you, for God's sakes. I mean, that's horrible. The only funny thing is that it's $30, so that's a bit much to end such a horrible plague on our society. I just wanted to let you know about it. And then the last, one of the other things I had seen was, all right, let me tell you a little bit of a story. You have your generic laptop and your little bit of a BlackBerry. They go into a room, and 9 months later, what kind of thing comes out? We're just going to call it the Flip Start. That's what this thing is. It's a ultra mobile PC in one side. It's a $2,000 laptop, which is around half the size of a laptop, double the size of a BlackBerry, if you can kind of figure your way around that. It's supposed to be the ultra mobile laptop for everyday use. So you're not going to be doing AutoCAD on this, and you're not going to be running Photoshop. You will, however, be able to use any office application, email, web surfing. Basically, this thing, you just pop it open and go. So it's interesting. It's an idea that I think might have legs for some of the less technologically enhanced people out there who don't need a whole computer system. They just need something very small and very compact, something they could take with them on vacation. But the $2,000 price tag for something that's that limited in scope, shall we say, seems a bit steep, more than a bit steep, actually. So I don't know if it's going to fail just because of price point. We've already seen what price point can do to the PS3 sales. So, I mean, this is just another thing where people don't really think these things through. Yes, it might cost you that much to make it, or just a little bit under that much to make it, but then you might want to tweak your design a little bit if you're having this many issues. $2,000 is too big of a nut to crack. Something like this, I'd say $1,100. Because you got to remember, you're dealing with grandma and grandpa and everybody trying to go online to Dell and buy the $300 or $400 machines. You're going to need a whole hell of a lot of rebates to get that thing back down to the normal, you know, low-tech family members that you're aiming this thing at. All right, let's see, what else do we have here? Apparently, there's been a whole bunch of news stories going around. It says, downloading is a pack rat's dream. There's a wonderful article over at Wired, and I have to admit, I'm a little bit of a pack rat myself, so that condition is named syllogomania, or basically to collect. It's compulsive hoarding. Basically, you keep everything. My grandfather was something like that, but he wasn't as bad as some of the people they reference in this article. He had the whole depression mentality. He kind of kept pretty much everything that he thought he could use again. I do have strange symptoms, like I'm almost deathly afraid of going somewhere without a bag. And the Boy Scout motto keeps throwing back into my head, be prepared. Well, you know, what do I need to be prepared for? So when I go to work, I have to have like a fully packed bag for anything I might need. I hate going to the doctor's office and not having a book to read. You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's simple stuff. It's not as bad as they describe in this article. But it basically says that there's a new way that collectors and you know, people who are deathly afraid to throw things out are finding a fix for their thing. You know, information hoarders, data storage nuts. They talked to this one guy with the pseudonym Jim, who has 2,500 gigabytes of data in his house. Basically, they reference that aliens could come back and create a low-res version of human civilization from 1990 to the present day. He has copies of every single TV show that he ever watched. Not just like if he had happened to catch Murphy Brown, for instance, it's not one of the ones they reference, but if he had happened to catch Murphy Brown, he would have every episode of Murphy Brown ever aired, or ever taped, even. He has a whole series of things that he goes through for finding his information, so it's definitely something you need to check out if you think you might have it. They have websites that, you know, have basically websites out there that have a whole bunch of... just lost my train of thought. They have websites there that have a whole bunch of you know, links to help people, and, you know, things you can say, okay, well, do I have this problem? And they also, you know, go in deeper with the condition. I definitely thought, you know, looked at it, and they said Google actually cured the one woman because she was hoarding all bits of data in case she might need to know something. And I actually used to do this myself. I had all the funny jokes that I ever had all in one binder, and then I had, you know, like if somebody sent me an email that I thought was funny, I'd print it out and put it in the binder. And after the binder got like 4 inches thick, I was like, yeah, this is ridiculous. If I can't remember the joke, it wasn't that funny to begin with. So, I mean, I still have some of the jokes around here somewhere, but I mean, it's, I have too much of a problem with keeping things. Like, if I've read a book, I bought it and I have it in my house. My son is never going to need to go to the library at school for any kind of test on anthropology, archaeology, paganism, anything about J.R.R. Tolkien. I think I have almost the entire set of anything written about or by him. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy in here, but not as bad as some of these gentlemen in the article. All right, next little thing we have here in the geeky news section is the Monkey See, Monkey Do. And now, in case you were unaware, Xbox Live recently hit 6 million people strong. That's an unbelievable number. You know, I believe that's Xbox and Xbox 360 with people subscribed to their service. Now, please take into account that some people have two accounts. Some households have multiple accounts for the same Xbox. That's understandable and a little bit irritating when you think about the fact that, you know, you bought this system, you wish they were just a way to have one account, multiple usernames for that account. It's actually referencing a website that I frequent quite often called unscripted360.com. So if you're an Xbox 360 or a normal Xbox guy and you want to head on over there, it's definitely a fun place to hang out. Deacon Blade 360 is the guy who writes it. There's a whole bunch of information. They also have a great forum community over there, so you can head on over there and look at that. Let's see what else we have here. Oh, the Monkey Do. Missed the entire point of that story. Monkey see, monkey do. Well, we saw what monkey saw, now we need to see what monkey's going to do. PlayStation Home is a service that's going to come online for the PlayStation 3. Now, this is going to be a free service, at least I the way I understand it. And they're trying to make PlayStation Home compete with Xbox Live. So they're taking the best elements, at least that they see, for, you know, Xbox, like the gamer tags and the Wii's, you know, the Mii's and all the achievements and everything like that, and they're trying to roll it all into one service. Now, I don't know. I just wanted to kind of throw it out there that they're going to do it. They're trying to package media so that you're going to be able to download games. They're trying to make the whole Sony online service that much better. So, sorry if you're hearing that. My cat's kind of running around the computer right now. Which, by the way, the computer threw a hissy fit before we started taping today. It would not start up, would not boot, so had to threaten it, and we're just trying to be very nice to it right about now, see what happens. Let's see with this. Yes, now we have the last little thing in the geeky news section. The FAA, yes, the U.S. Department of Transportation, actually, is talking about ditching Windows completely. They're talking about taking normal, you know, XP-based machines, installing Linux on them, and instead of having the apps or the Office suite installed, they're talking about not using OpenOffice, which is what a lot of people thought they would do. Now they're talking about using Google Apps because they have the integrated email, they have a whole bunch of security features, and they have a whole bunch of collaborative features. That's kind of interesting. We're going to see where this one goes. I like the idea of government institutions starting to use Linux because it just seems to be a more intelligent decision from a governmental body. You know, basically, they're spending our money to upgrade from Windows XP, or they would be spending our money to upgrade from Windows XP to Windows Vista, which, you know, that's going to be a huge chunk out of their operating budget, hence our tax dollars. Now, we have no say in how these things are spent. I think there was some court case in the middle of the 1960s where you can't sue a governmental institution on how they spend your money. We can, however, object to it, and the amount of money that they would be spending to buy new versions of Office, new versions of Vista, is going to be significantly more than the amount that they would spend on training and support for Linux. So I think that's a good idea, and I hope they kind of keep up with it. We'll see exactly where that goes. Now, that kind of wraps up the geeky news section, kind of stuff we're going to blow through. A little bit more detailed section here as we hit the 25th minute, so we're going to try and push through. Like I said, we're no tech talk today, so there's not going to be any long diatribe on any one topic in particular. But we're trying to just switch it up a little bit here, trying to give you a whole bunch of different stuff to think about. So, again, somebody had just hit the microphone. I think it was one of the cats. All right, and we're having problems. There we go. All right. First one is another Wired News article. We actually have three articles from Wired today. It says Steve Jobs Spymaster. Now, if you remember last January, apparently there was a huge legal battle where Steve Jobs tried to sue two websites for saying that there was a product coming out called Asteroid, codenamed Asteroid. And he basically wanted to know the names of their sources. So this article goes into detail about how different corporate espionage and different corporate security measures work. Basically, I think they call it a canary trap. They feed different bits of information to different people within their organization and see which one comes out. Which doesn't explain why he would actually sue for the names, because if he was doing something like that, then he'd be able to know pretty much who did it. And they also go into the part that I found interesting. They don't think that he does that. They give you an idea about the mindset behind Steve Jobs and how he goes about developing some of the products and how he keeps so many things secret and why he does it. So for instance, there's things like everybody knew Microsoft was working on Vista for the longest amount of time. So there was no big hullabaloo when they came out with Vista on launch day. I mean, it was just like a meh. Some people are going to upgrade, some people are not. The way that Steve Jobs and Apple in general kind of approaches these things is that they make them an event. Since there's no information beforehand, this is all repurposed from the Associated Press, by the way. But the way they go about it is, since there's no information beforehand and since their fans are so loyal to the machines, they actually generate a huge amount of publicity as they go. Because, you know, when you come out with a new product, nobody knows anything about it up until that point. You want to be able to get all the information you can first. So everybody tunes in, everybody listens. It's one long commercial that everybody sits there for. It's unbelievable. When you really think about it from a marketing standpoint, you can't have a better idea. You're introducing a new product. You're not going anywhere else. You are basically doing everything on your terms. So they said, for instance, one of the things that I didn't know was that the code name for the iPod was actually Dulcimer. So I thought that was cool. It's just kind of a nice melodic name. But they said there was only one group within the entire Apple company that knew that it was going to be called the iPod. And that was the publications people, because they had to have all the packaging and everything like that correct. They had to have all the ad campaigns correct. No one else knew anything, from the designers to the advertising department themselves. Publications knew, you know, so the people crafting the images and everything that was going in knew. Nobody else. So they were going to be delivering the stuff to the advertising. I mean, yes, they have non-disclosure agreements, but people have gotten around that. And for instance, when Microsoft was releasing the Zune, what they did was they gave different color Zunes to everybody in the product development team, so that if a picture appeared online, like, hey, who had the lime green one with the chocolate double shot on it? All right, well, that would be Joe from accounting. Hey, Joe, get in here. You're fired, and give me your Zune. So they actually got around that through a little bit of Photoshop and a black and white camera. So nice try, Microsoft. You still haven't been able to hold a candle to Apple in that regard. They really have interesting ideas. Like, for instance, Steve Jobs' own family doesn't even know about these products. The guy who's working on the iPod, does his own kids don't know. They would love to know, but they don't. When Steve Jobs had the Apple boombox, the hi-fi set at home, it was covered in a black sheet at all times. The only time he ever used it was when everybody else was asleep or away. So that kind of gives you a little insight into the company and how they control things. Just kind of interesting to take a look into a company from that perspective. All right, now the next up here is we pegged it on the last show, talking a little bit about Best Buy's intranet site. So basically they have a copy of what would look like BestBuy.com for internal use, and they have not yet said why they have it. I always thought, you know, it might be I'm thinking the best of people. I thought it might be a way for, in case the internet connectivity goes down, they'd still be able to pull up the website and say, well, yes, sir, this is 15% off. This is 20% off. No, you do not have a sale. But instead, the prices were different routinely on the two, and the Best Buy employees were instructed to make the better decision. So if something was cheaper on the intranet site, you give the customer that. If something was cheaper on the external site, you give the customer that. So it's kind of interesting, but lower paid employees at Best Buy, the people on little power trips, the guy you're talking to when you're trying to find out which camera to get or stuff like that. Yeah, they're like, oh, well, you come in there and say, hey, I have 15% off the new Fuji Finepix. Yeah, actually, not really. They pull up the website, it's full price, so that's what you go up there thinking it is. So that's what they were thinking of. And now, apparently, the state where Best Buy is from, Connecticut, the Attorney General is starting to look deeper into this to see if there's any consumer, not malpractice, I forget the word I'm looking for, but basically nastiness going on. So definitely keep you informed on that. Just want to let you know that you heard it here first. Well, possibly. We broke it after a couple other people. Another thing we had here is definitely who watches the watchers and why do I still have to pay? They're talking a little bit about municipal wireless installations, and they're saying five ways that the public ownership solves the U.S. broadband problem. Basically, there is not broadband in a lot of the rural areas, so they're trying to talk about how this is beneficial. The only problem, in case you didn't know, I'm from Philadelphia, and the only problem I have with the proposed plan for the municipal Wi-Fi here is that you have to qualify for the lower price. I would think that, and the prices are not necessarily cheap. They're not like a drop in the bucket. When they first put this out there, they said it was going to be like $3 a month or something like that, which is perfectly fine, and I could consider doing that. Now, they said for the low-income people in the city, it's $9.95 a month, and for the high-income people, it's $20 a month. That's the same as dial-up, and I'm already paying for a Comcast connection at home, which is significantly more than that. So it just doesn't seem to be a real value-add feature for the city. I understand why they're doing it, and there's a whole bunch of different arguments as to why it shouldn't be free, and you're an idiot for thinking that it's free. But the counter argument that I have to that is that in Philadelphia we have a city wage tax. Not very many big cities do. I think the only other one is Detroit. And we pay roughly 3.7% of our salary a year to the city. Now, this is supposed to all go for maintenance for roads and everything else like that, and I guess city infrastructure and stuff like that. Now, it's not going to cost them that much pairing up with Earthlink per capita to have this. So I don't understand what the big problem is, why they're charging such large fees. I mean, maybe they see a potential cash in on this. I just think it's a little bit steep for what they're trying to offer. They're also not talking about wireless N or anything like that. They're talking maybe like 7-8 megabits connectivity. I don't know. We'll see. There's a whole bunch of very intelligent and very wonderfully thought out comments below this article over at Slashdot. So you should really head on over there and just check it out. Basically, there is a good reason for why you want certain services to be free. For instance, if there was an ad-supported service, I could see that. Because you're going to have a lot of low-income people in the city who are not going to be able to afford the $9.95 a month. They're going to look at it and say, okay, do I get food for my baby or do I buy internet? I barely have a computer, if I even do, so how's it going to help me? So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that that people really need to look at before they jump to conclusions like I want to do. But I just wanted to throw it out there, see if we had any kind of phrases or any kind of feedback on that. Please, people, let me know what you think. The next thing we have up here, again, this is another one of those stranger-than-fiction things. Apparently, tasers are more dangerous than people thought. They also have – this is from Gizmodo, I believe. Yep. All right. Well, there's been studies done about, tasing someone and the effects on it. Well, apparently, the corporation that controls the information for this, let me see. It's called Taser International. I'm sorry. It says Taser International just loves zapping reporters to get themselves on the news. So basically, look, you're fine after the fact. But they also sue, apparently, anyone who publishes a report saying the contrary. So this reminds me a lot of the early cell phone buzz, where if a website came out and say, oh, yeah, cell phones cause cancer, immediately the cell phone companies would start suing them. It's like, okay, if you have a scientific fact behind it, if you have scientific information behind it, you don't sue them to take it offline. You attack the scientific methodology behind it if you don't agree with it. So, I mean, I know they're protecting a business model there, but hey, shocker, apparently getting tased might actually be bad for your heart. Well, I don't know. If you're electrocuted, it's bad for your heart, and that's basically what a taser is. So I don't really see how this is a big idea, but just wanted to throw it out there, let people know about it. Now we have our last story from Wired today. This is iTunes glitches remain on Vista. Now, if you remember a little bit ago, I talked about how Apple was putting up there and saying everybody needs to stop and not upgrade to Vista because iTunes doesn't work on it. There's a whole series of problems with the with Apple and not with Apple, with your iPod and using iTunes on the new operating system. It's completely unstable. They're not saying what they were saying was that the operating system was unstable. What they meant to say, what they should have said, is that our software is unable to run on that operating system. Now, if you look back through Apple's history, basically they have a very cold relationship with developers at times, like from when they moved from OS 9 to OS 10. There's certain developers that got a lot of help doing it, but for the third-party guys, there was no legacy support. I mean, they had Classic running, but it wasn't necessarily the full-featured Classic that you were used to and you saw. It's just they kind of leave everybody who's using older equipment in the dust very often. Windows, however, has a much better track record, believe it or not, at least from my experience, of using legacy applications. Now, this being said, when Microsoft upgrades their operating system to this brand new Vista, I'm not saying it's wonderful, I'm not saying it's great, I haven't really tried it other than the beta, but what I'm saying is that when Microsoft puts this out, Apple immediately throws up a flag and says, this is a problem with the operating system. No, Microsoft has been committed to working with your developers on getting iTunes to work. The problem here is that you can't get your program to work on their system. It is not a problem with the system itself. I just wanted to kind of throw that out there, correct that, and they've taken the notice down off their website, probably because Microsoft gave them a stern double look, but, you know, it's just... I don't know. And the funniest thing about this article, I don't know who they think they're writing this for. This is from Wired. I mean, this is a magazine which means connected, basically. The final paragraph kind of gave me a little bit of a chuckle. It says, though Apple and Microsoft are partners in some cases, iTunes works with PCs and Microsoft Office has a version for Macs. The two are also longtime rivals. They compete in computer systems, which Microsoft dominates, and digital music arena, which Apple dominates. Well, thank you for that, because, you know, really, I hadn't been around for the past 15 years. I didn't know about that, and I'm pretty sure anybody who's actually grown up at any point in time enough to actually subscribe to your magazine kind of knows what they're talking about with that, you know? Just seemed to kind of be thrown in there, I guess, to get the article a little bit more meat to put on the page, but I don't know, just kind of crazy. Sticking with the whole iPod thing, I don't know if there's anybody out there who considers themselves an audiophile. I am not an audiophile, but I do recognize good audio when I hear it. Now, I had long heard the difference between tube sound and compressed chip sound. Now, if you don't know what that is, basically any radio you have today, any audio device, almost any audio device that you have, is everything's done from circuit boards and chip synthesizers, and it's a very, according to people who enjoy the other kind of music, it's a very clean, it's a very crisp, and it's a very detached sound. Now, if you've ever heard something on a tube radio, it actually uses vacuum tubes. It's an analog technology. If you've ever heard something on a tube radio, it has a completely different sound quality to it. There's a much warmer sound to it. In fact, the microphone that I'm using right now is a studio condenser mic. There's a circuit board in there which is turning my soothing tones into digital format for you. There are other microphones that are tube microphones that actually have a much warmer sound than you currently hear out of my voice. So that's just another thing to take care of. Now, these are vacuum tubes. These are very old technology here. There's now a signal conditioner that they're trying to put on the market. It's called the Music Cocoon for $800. Yes, the lovely price of $800. It will take your input, either from CD, MP3, or iPod, warmify it, and then send it to your speakers. It's an interesting idea. I don't know if it actually has a lot of legs, and I'm pretty sure audiophiles, I know for a fact that audiophiles spend enormous amounts of money to get good quality sound. They're not going to be playing MP3s, first off, and they're probably not going to be using an iPod or a CD. They might be using a CD, but I don't know. I know a couple audiophiles who are unbelievably religiously addicted to upgrading their systems, but I have a much simpler test that I've actually done on my own. There's a radio from the mid-1950s that was my great-grandfather's. It was the old-style vacuum tube radio, only got AM frequencies. So, amplification modulation, by the way. It only got AM frequencies, so, and when you turn it on, it doesn't actually turn on. So the first couple times I turned this thing on, I was like, ah, man, it's broken. I'll just keep it because it looks pretty cool. Well, then one time I turned it on and forgot to turn it off. After about 10 to 15 to 25 seconds, it warmed up, clicked, and started up. This thing has vacuum tubes in it. I think there's a row of six of them. This is what I use to listen to the local baseball team, the Phillies, when I'm in work. I just click it on, and it has a wonderfully warm sound when you can actually get good reception with it. But I understand a little bit more after hearing this radio why people complain about the current state of audio. Basically, people just want amount of content. They're not looking for quality of content. So it's just kind of an interesting way to take a look at it, but $800 is more than a bit steep for me to play around with. Now, the next thing we have here is another alarm clock. If you remember, we've had the annoying alarm clocks, the Japanese human alarm clock, the guy who stood over your bed and screamed at you and pushed you and shoved you until you got up. Now we have what they call Jeeves. This is the P.G. Wodehouse Jeeves. It's the prototype English butler. Basically, it looks like a clock tower, almost like Big Ben shrunk down. So it has, you know, like Corinthian columns on either side, lovely architecturally molded things. And there's apparently a 90-second relaxing exercise to put you to sleep. There's a 50 different wake-up messages, so it's kind of an interesting idea. Apparently, it's a very polite way to wake up, so we thought we'd throw that out there and let you see that. We're trying to find more interesting video sound clips if anybody had them, so we'll get back to you on that one. Let's see what else we have here. There's a little thing here we have called Because We Can. If you've ever seen the videos of the people, this goes into a little bit about why it would frighten people that much. But basically, it says, look really close, and has you staring at a screen for about 10 or 15 seconds. Then a gruesome or large face pops up into the foreground, and there's this blood-curdling scream, and it scares people. There's a lovely video over at mopo.ca that I just thought I'd share with everybody. It's horrible how far this chick jumps with the video. I just thought I'd throw it out there because, hey, I found it online and I thought it was kind of funny. And then the last thing that we have here is yet another strange gadget out of Japan. I would strongly suggest people not to ever buy this. This thing looks disgusting. It's a USB mouse that is supposed to be in the shape of a rice omelet. So it has a yellow texture and a slimy looking red thing going over the top, and then there's rice eking out the side. So it kind of looks like something you'd find in a morgue. I don't know. It has a definite sticky look to it. So I don't really know what they're looking at. I just thought it looked, and it's one of those things, it's like a train wreck. You can't look away, or I haven't been able to look away. As I've been putting the podcast together, it's like, you know, I really want to cut this out. I don't want to show this today. Oh God, I kind of have to. It's just that nasty. So throw it up there. Fair warning. It looks kind of weird. It basically looks like a rice omelet. If you've ever seen what one of those looks like, it actually looks moist. So you have been warned. All right. Now we have that about wraps up the tech tidbits. Like I said, next week we're going to have the Tech Talk, which is going to be all the Media Center edition. We're going to be talking all about the different ways that you can stream media from one PC to another, connectivity between Windows and Macs, how to share files between them. We're going to talk a little bit about the Xbox 360. We're going to talk a whole bunch of stuff. I'm trying to get a whole bunch of stuff together for you and actually have like a firm timeline to go through and explain and talk everybody through everything. We've had a pretty long show so far, so we have a couple little caffeinated bits to get through, and then we're going to get you on out the door. There's a new recipe in the works we want to kind of let people know about. It's the peanut butter cup coffee. Now, like I said, I'm not really one for flavored coffees, but there are certain times in your life where you just need a little bit of a dessert, but you don't want something that's not coffee, shall we say. So what we've tried so far is take a little bit of the nonpareils and put them in unbelievably steaming hot coffee and melt them down. And then we put 2 teaspoons of peanut butter in there. I mean, it's very, very simple. It's like 3 nonpareils and 2 teaspoons of peanut butter, and then we mixed it up. That was almost, but not quite exactly what a Reese's peanut butter cup tastes like. So we tried adding a little bit more sugar, then we tried adding a couple spices. So that's the direction that we're headed in for this. Just because I did it accidentally one day, actually, I don't know why I had peanut butter on a spoon, but I think I might have been making like a PB&J sandwich or something like that. Dipped it into the coffee, and the coffee actually tasted pretty good. We've already tried adding powdered chocolate to it, and that makes it taste really bitter and tart. So we're going to move on. We just wanted to kind of say, also, we're looking into new recipes for the coffee vodka, the coffee-infused vodka. So in case you haven't seen that, you can head on over to the recipes section at our podcast. We've actually moved stuff around on the podcast, trying to reduce the clutter that you see on the sides. We still have all the links to the blogs that we talk about, and the blogs that we read and everything like that on the right-hand side. The left-hand side, we just basically have podcast feeds, dumpster dive, which is basically dig through the garbage that is the ancient Caffeinations, and a link to our archives so you can see all the different shows over the past couple months. And then on the right-hand side, we have our sponsor, and then there's the email button down on the right-hand side at the very bottom of the column. We heartily suggest that you take advantage of that. There's little chicklets there, so if you'd like to put a link on your website to us, please, you can use the chicklet that's down there. You can even host it. You can even link it from our site. We're fine with that. And then there's a link to our survey down there. So, hey, if you feel like taking a couple minutes, take 5 minutes and filling that our marketing survey, we'd be really appreciative of that. And then the last thing, or two things here I wanted to talk to you about, again, back into the caffeinated bits section. Home or office brew? I've done both. I've actually brewed the coffee at home, taken it into the office, and I've brewed it in the office and, drank it throughout the day. And I'm just wondering out there if anybody has a preference. Because personally, lately, what I've been doing is brewing the coffee at home and taking it in. First of all, because then the entire office doesn't smell like coffee. It's not a bad thing, but if you have, we'll just call them coffee vultures, people who don't necessarily want to make their own coffee. And I drink a significant amount of coffee, so while I'm fine sharing a cup of coffee or two, but if there's somebody who's in an office next to you or something like that who routinely goes by and say, "Is that coffee I smell?" No, that's not coffee you smell. That's bacon. It's just a special flavor. And they sit there and look at you, and you go, never mind. Yeah, there's coffee here. Have some. So I find out that, first of all, that I've been taking less coffee with me when I actually take it. So I'm reducing my caffeine intake. So I was drinking about a pot of coffee a day, which by all accounts is probably not healthy. So definitely wanted to let you know about all that. Just wanted to get people's feedback on that. Please send all your information to caffeination@gmail.com if you'd like to talk about that. Or if you'd like to pop onto the show, you can Skype us at caffa-nation, so caffi-nation.com, or not .com, just caffeination. And the last thing we had here is the talking beer glass. They have a beer glass, and as it gets lower, it says, refill immediately in danger of sobering up. Is your beer running dangerously low? Now, this is all good, well and good, but what I want is I want one of these that has coffee. So I want like a coffee thermos that, you know, barks orders at you. Say, attention, sir, your caffeine system is starting to let too much blood back into it. You know, stuff like that. That would be more interesting to me than the beer one, but I thought I'd throw it out there in honor of St. Paddy's Day fast approaching. The amateur hour for drinking yourself under the table, as it were. So hopefully everybody out there will be safe on that day as well. And that about wraps up what we have for you here today on the Caffeination. Probably right around 50 minutes at this point. Yep, 48 and counting. So hopefully everybody enjoyed today's show. And there we go. That's the exit music, which is Mortal Kombat. We've had a couple people ask me. All right. So if you enjoyed today's show and you'd like to drop us a line, first off, you can register for our blog and receive our newsletter over at caffeination.com. Click the register button up at the top and you'll receive our newsletter every time we do an episode. It's twice weekly. That's basically all there is to it. So you can please drop us a line at caffeination@gmail.com if you'd like to add something to the podcast, have a couple links you'd like to share, something like that. If you're listening to this on the stream over at the Tech Podcast Network, or you don't know where the heck you got the audio, then you can find it. It lives back at www.caffeination.com. We're a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. We're also proudly listed over at blueberry.com. That's BLUBRRY. And if you're looking for us on MySpace, we're at myspace.com/caffeination. Thanks for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.